9. Stay mobile, I tell Cassie. Use the trees and... I don't want to say it, but this is life or death, even if there's nothing noble about taking a life. Fight dirty. I don't think I'm going to get a chance to kick anyone in the jimmy, Cassie says, not understanding the depths to which a man or woman with a gun can stoop. So I show her. Though the onrushing men are still 50 feet out, I take aim at the man in the front. He's young and hungry for blood, trying to aim his pistol at me while riding a horse at full gallop. I take my time aiming, timing out the beats between each rise and fall of the horse's head. I hesitate for a moment, knowing that if I pull this trigger, I likely won't stop pulling it until either I'm dead or a heap of men are. I'm reluctant to kill. I thought I'd escaped a life of violence. But I'm more reluctant to die, and I'm sure as shit not going to let anything happen to Cass. I fire. Just once. The effect is immediate and catastrophic. The horse, now with a 10-millimeter-sized hole in its forehead, collapses at 25 miles per hour. 1,000 pounds of meat and hooves topples. The rider is thrown to the side, twisting in the air with a shout, before colliding with a tree. Ribs crack like fireworks. As the dead or dying man falls to the forest floor, the two steeds directly behind the still toppling horse trip over its body. Two men are flung. One lands on his head, neck bending at a sick angle. The second man lands on his back, the air knocked out of him. He'll be back in the fight inside 30 seconds, but there's no time to worry about him. The 7 remaining horses and riders weave around the chaos, closing the distance. I glance at Cassie and am met by pale astonishment. Go, I urge, and she springs into action, flanking left. Stay here, I tell Levi, stabbing a finger at the stream, and stay down. I break right, heading uphill. Several shots ring out. Men scream behind me. Maybe they're Charles's men, maybe the newcomers. It's hard to say, even when fighting an enemy that speaks another language. Screams are the same no matter what part of the world you're in. Bark splinters when I duck behind a tree. These men are capable fighters, but they're limited by 1920s technology. Reloading takes time, especially while on horseback. And their revolvers and rifles need to be reloaded far more often than my handgun, which carries 10 rounds. The downside of this situation, aside from being outmanned, is that I've only got 2 spare magazines. 30 rounds total. Well, 29. I'm not sure if Cassie has any spare magazines, and she already put 3 rounds into a raccoon. She has at least 10 rounds. I lean out from behind the tree, fire a single shot into the chest of a man caught reloading his rifle. He drops from the side of his mount, revealing a man in a Stetson, leveling 2 revolvers at me. The tree shakes from his assault. The man's heavy-hitting rounds eat up the bark. The man's aim and speed are impressive. If I were to poke my head out on either side, I'd likely lose it. But he's not trying to kill me. He's pinning me down, buying time. When the pop of 9mm ammo fills the air, I duck down and lean out, 4 feet below where my head should be. Before the man can adjust his aim, I fire a round into his horse's ankle. The beast falls to the side, pinning the man's leg beneath it and providing a very easy shot for me. A single round to the top of his Stetson ends his fight. I can't help but wonder how this battle turned out without us here. How many of these attackers lived? Given the shape of Charles's men and their limited weaponry, I think most of the attackers would have escaped unscathed. Now, if I have my way, the only ones who survive will be those who turn tail and run, and I reckon not a one of them will do so. I take a moment to catch a breath and compress my emotions. Killing these men is like killing generations of people. Everyone who would have descended from them will now never exist, I think. Time travel is pretty far out of my wheelhouse. But even if that's true, I'm not about to sacrifice myself or those under my care, including anyone still alive at Synergy, who, near as I can figure, are the only people who can stop what's happening. A man on horseback rounds a stand of trees, shotgun leveled at my head. Knowing I can't dodge the full spread of a shotgun shell, I pull my trigger 3 times without aiming. The second round strikes the horse's flank. As it bucks in pain, the man squeezes his trigger. I'm spun around by what feels like a punch on my left arm. The deep pain is followed by a cascade of bee stings. I've been hit, but it's not bad enough to slow me down. Before the man can recover from the shotgun's recoil and his flailing horse, I put 2 rounds in his chest. With my 10th and final round already in the chamber, I eject the magazine and let it fall to the ground. My hand drops to my hip, snags a fresh magazine, and slaps it home. The entire process takes 2 seconds, and it's nearly half a second too long. A rifle cracks. Bark and wood fragments spray into my face. A sniper's round has just missed my head. I slip to the tree's far side, pinned again and unable to follow my advice to Cassie. But she's doing a good job. I watch her for a moment, slipping from one tree to another, firing shots when she moves. There are men on the ground and horses running free. I feel sorry that she's been forced to kill these men, but maybe she'll find comfort in the fact that in the time we're from, they're long since dead. That is, if she doesn't also figure out that killing them might mean erasing their bloodlines from history. Cassie makes another break for it, raising her gun to fire at a horse rising up on its hind legs, the rider intending to block himself while using the steed to bludgeon her. The click, click, click of an empty gun makes me wince. Whether or not Cassie has more ammo, she's never been in a gunfight, and counting bullets doesn't come naturally to most people. Not when men are screaming, bullets are flying, and death is a single mistake away. She's clipped by the horse's hoof and sent sprawling to the forest floor. She attempts to stand, but she's tackled by the man who lost his horse. I fire 2 rounds, both of them striking the man still on horseback. I can't do anything about the man on top of her, not at this range. A 10-millimeter round could pass through her attacker and strike Cassie. Helping her means taking care of the sniper. A quick peek to the left is followed by a bullet slamming into the side of the tree, nearly hitting my skull. I duck back and peek right before he can adjust. He is 100 feet back, lying down behind a fallen tree with a clear line of sight. Not an ideal situation, but compared to the time travel conundrum, a gunfight is something I can solve. Steeling myself to make a break for it, I glance around the stream to find most of Charles's men are dead. The crew who attacked them isn't faring much better, though. There are just a few men left on each side. Charles and one of his boys are trading shots with 3 remaining posse members. Arthur and a stranger are locked in mortal combat, fighting for control of a knife. When Charles puts a round in one of the posse members, resulting in a high-pitched scream, I run. Even trained soldiers can't help but glance away from the action when one of their own is gunned down. I extend my window of opportunity by firing 3 rounds toward the sniper, forcing him to duck. Outside his zone of fire, I begin weaving my way in and out of the trees. He fires at me in rapid succession, but I'm never visible for more than a second, and never in the same place. He's not a bad shot, but he's not experienced in this kind of combat. If he was, he'd already be up and moving rather than sitting still, trying to hit a moving target in the woods. When I hear him curse, I holster my gun. It won't be necessary, and I've already used more rounds than I should have. The man's eyes widen as I round the last tree dividing us. I've caught him reloading, but he's quicker than I expected. He chambers around and swivels the weapon toward me as I close the distance. The rifle booms as I grasp the muzzle and angle it away and toward the ground. Using my momentum, I shove the rifle hard, sending the butt into his face. Blood oozes from his nose and then explodes as I drive my foot into his gut, forcing the air from his lungs. As he spills back, I spin the rifle around, chamber a bullet, and fire it into his chest. The rifle is an M1917 Enfield, a common rifle of the period with a mounted scope. I drop to a knee, raise the rifle to my shoulder, and peer through the scope. The man atop Cassie raises a knife, prepared to stab her. I have no choice. If I don't fire, she'll die. My index finger slips around the trigger and squeezes, but stops a moment before the hammer snaps forward. Levi lunges into view, tackling the man off Cassie. The men separate and I take aim again, ready to end the fight and keep Levi from harm. But I never get the chance. Levi sets on the man with a series of fast punches and kicks that lack skill, but are powered by raw ferocity. The man staggers back under the assault, but is reaching for a knife. "Levi!" I shout, waiting for the opportunity to fire, but the kid is lost in the fight. Probably doesn't even hear me. I flinch when the man swings the blade, but Levi reacts as though he was ready for the strike. He leans back just out of range, catches the man's arm, and shoves. With all his weight behind the attack, the knife stabs its owner. They fall to the ground in a heap. Levi rises, draws the blade from the man's side, and then stabs him twice more right in the heart. I shake my head. This is going to scar him for life. Cassie, too. Whoever is responsible for this mess is going to have a lot to answer for. "Hey," a gruff voice says from the stream. "Turn around, real slow-like, or your friend loses his head." If we live long enough to find them.